Hi, aloha wina la kako. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Koahi Perez. I am a PhD student in the Department of Tropical Plant and Soil Sciences at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And today I am here to talk to you folks about the deceptive plumeria as I went on my quest to find meaningful characters to delimit species within a genus. So I think a good place to start off is just to introduce what plumeria is. It's a tropical plant. It belongs to the Apocynaceae family, the milkweed or dogbane family. And it's naturally distributed in, well, throughout Central America and also in the greater and lesser Antilles. Regarding uses, in Hawaii, we use the flowers from the plumeria. We string them into leis or hair adornments. Other places use them for religious and ceremonial purposes. In the horticulture industry, we use them as, they're sold as potted ornamentals or are found in a lot of planned landscapes. In the cosmetics industry, we can find them in perfumes, lotions, even essential oils. In parts of India and China, various medicinal uses have been ascribed to certain species of plumerias. Now, this is where we start to segue into why I'm calling this a deceptive plumeria. Let's talk about the muddled taxonomy of plumeria. Way back in the 1700s, when plumerias were first starting to be collected and described, one of the things that I found really frustrating when I was trying to do my literature search was the plumerias were described under three different genus names. So we had Plumieria, Plumeria, and Plumiera. On top of that, a lot of the descriptions that were pre-1900 were all in Latin, and I don't speak Latin, so that made it a real headache for me to kind of get through and just to figure out what these authors are describing on the different Plumeria species. Thankfully, we have some English translations and also some descriptions in English as well. One of the other problems that I encountered dealing with plumeria was some descriptions were very brief, things like short shrub, oblong leaves, flowers white, odoriferous. That I feel like that describes like half the plants in the world. Other times, especially when it comes to the Latin descriptions, some of these descriptions go on for like paragraphs. And one of the other problems that I encountered was this overlap of descriptions. So I'd be reading up on descriptions of one species, get down to the bottom of the page, and I'm like, I swear I just read this up above. And sure enough, there was a lot of overlap in descriptions. Thankfully, we have Robert Woodson Jr. He came about in the 1930s. Fabulous botanist, in my opinion. Did a lot of work on plumerias. And he recognized seven species based on his surveys of herbarium specimens. Now, he also mentions the existence of a Plumeria obtusa species complex. And essentially what he did was he ignored all the subtle variable leaf types. And he just noticed that, hey, there's about 7 to 10 previously described species. They all have obtuse leaf tips. So let's lump them all under the Plumeria obtusa. So that's how we end up with the Plumeria obtusa species complex. However, he did provide us with a very good framework for how we are going to identify Plumeria species. And then, of course, nowadays, one of the problems we have is people want to be different. Everybody wants to be an individual, and let's not get started about lumpers versus splitters. So according to Woodson, if you consult with Woodson's findings, we have about 7 species in the world. According to the plant list, we have about 12 species. And then we have the world checklist of selected plant families. God bless the splitters. According to them, we have 20 species. So clearly what I think we need to do is have sort of a come-to-Jesus meeting with all the plumeria folks and sort of come to an agreement on how many species we actually have. However, as a requisite first step, we need to sort of concentrate on how we're going to identify those species. So that's kind of where my work comes in. In my preliminary analyses, I was just surveying our own plumeria collection of species at our Waimanalo research station back on Waimanalo, Oahu. And I started to notice subtle differences in leaf shapes or leaf texture, leaf apices, mostly characters dealing with leaves. And I started to wonder, I wonder if there is, you know, some kind of combination of characters that we can look at that we can use to describe a species. So in other words, are there any combination of vegetative characters that we can use to identify a Plumeria species? Which led me to my morphological investigation. So my question here was, what morphological characters can be used to distinguish Plumeria species? So I surveyed a fairly small sample of 57 taxa. I wanted to keep it small because I wasn't sure how wrong I'd be. And I scored each of these samples for 43 morphological characters, mostly comprised of leaf characters, but also some trunk growth and seed characters. And I employed a iterative principal component analysis on the data set. So how this works is you run the data set through the initial principal component analysis, and when you identify clusters like these two species clusters here, they're supposed to be representative of species. You go back to the data set and you pull them out, and then you rerun the analysis again to see whether or not you can fish out any more species clusters. And the good thing about looking at a PCA biplot is not only do you get to see the clustering of species, but you can also start to sort of fish out what characters you can use to describe certain species. So, for example, with this Plumeria clusioides on the left, we can use morphological characters like pink margins and mid-veins, inconspicuous abaxial venation, and also flat leaf orientation to describe Plumeria clusioides. So that was just one example of how we can use PCA to identify species. Unfortunately, PCA does have its limits, especially when you're dealing with morphologically variable taxa, as exemplified here. So what we see in this graph is 30 data points, and these represent three different species, and they're all color-coded. Coincidentally, these species fall under the Plumeria obtusa species complex. However, if you can, as you notice the dispersion of colors, what my take home from this is the current set of morphological characters I have are just too variable, even within a species. And so here's just kind of a visual depiction of what I was talking about. So sometimes, even on one plant, you will find a whole bunch of variable leaf shapes. Sometimes you will find variable leaf shapes and variable leaf venation patterns. So just, you know, a whole combination of those things you will be able to find on these certain Plumeria species, especially those of the Plumeria obtusa species complex. However, I was able to identify unique combinations of characters, which helped to identify 8 out of the 11 Plumeria species. And this was due to some combination of leaf characters concerned with surface texture, leaf apices, margins, petiole attachment, and leaf ticksis. But I also wanted to take it up a notch and look at DNA, so I wanted to identify molecular markers that we could also distinguish Plumeria species with. So my two research questions here are, what molecular markers or combinations thereof could help us identify species? And are these regions phylogenetically informative? So because it's DNA and so much easier to preserve than fresh leaf samples to do morphological work, I expanded my sampling to 93 samples, and this time they represented 13 putative species. So I sequenced 5 regions from each of these samples, and these 5 regions were found to have some kind of utility in various evolutionary investigations with other taxa within the Apocynaceae family. So I figured, why not try sequencing these 5 regions and see what happens when we're just looking at Plumerias? So I conducted separate and combined analyses using Bayesian inference. And so here is an example of what I consider sort of a poor region. As I mentioned, we looked at 13 putative species, and what we were only able to recover was 6 Plumeria groups that were supposed to represent species. One of the red flags for me that this wasn't a really good region was we had these Plumeria pudica, Caracasana, and Isabella sort of lumped together. And what got kind of confusing to me was there was this Plumeria obtusa species complex where a whole bunch of species were lumped into the Plumeria obtusa grouping. I wasn't sure what to make of it because I figured, okay, maybe this is true and accurate. But then again, I was getting a little worried because, you know, we had that Plumeria pudica, those Plumeria pudica Caracas on Isabella grouping. So I was like, maybe this region isn't very informative. And especially regarding phylogenetic utility, you can't do much when you have a whole bunch of internal polytomy. So again, this region wasn't the best region to look at. On the other hand, we did find a fairly good single region that we could use, the RPL32 Turnell. It's an intergenic spacer region within the chloroplast genome. And I was able to recover about 8 Plumeria groups. We did get better resolution, but again, regarding the phylogenetic utility, we can't do much with it because of the polytomies that are still present. So we can't make too many phylogenetic inferences if we're just going to use one single region. However, with this region, we were able to identify a whole bunch of diagnostic indels. For example, we can look at Plumeria caracasana pudica in this one accession called Isabella. Side story, Plumeria caracasana is currently regarded as a synonym of Plumeria pudica, but as you can see, they're morphologically distinct. And now, with my work, I have shown that Plumeria caracasana is molecularly distinct from Plumeria pudica. As you can see, Plumeria caracasana is missing that stretch of nucleotides that's present in pudica. On top of that, Isabella is some named variety, but we're not sure if it's a species or what to call it. It was just accessioned in our own Wampanoag collection as Isabella. And so we planted out some seedlings and extracted DNA from that and conducted molecular comparisons. And what we were finding is that Isabella does have a lot of sequence similarity between Plumeria caracasana and pudica. However, we know that it is molecularly distinct from Plumeria pudica. So it could be a very close relative. When we combined the regions together, what we were able to do was recover 9 Plumeria species. And these were all supported with fairly high posterior probabilities. And again, when we combine the regions, what happens is we get an enhanced resolution. So the polytomies are now broken out, which means we can start to conduct more phylogenetic or evolutionary studies within this genus. And again, the Plumeria obtusa complex was maintained. So I think this is sort of a molecular verification of, well, kind of stating that Mr. Woodson was in fact right. Even though he looked at morphology, he was pretty much on the right track because we have confirmation of Plumeria obtusa complex. And again, just a quick discussion about Plumeria pudica, caracasana, and Isabella. What we see here is Plumeria caracasana is in fact a distinct species from Plumeria pudica. And also we can now we know where to place Isabella. It's a very close relative of both Plumeria caracasana and pudica. So regarding the molecular findings, the RPL32 region gave us the best resolution when used as a single region. And we were able to recover a lot of diagnostic indels from this particular region. When we combined the data sets, we were able to recover more species, 9 out of the 13. And I account for the missing 4 as they were lumped within the Plumeria obtusa species complex. And really what this did was provides us with a phylogenetic framework or skeleton by which we can start to carry out evolutionary studies. So in conclusion, the morphological and molecular evidence verifies the existence of currently recognized species. In addition, the evidence also supports the resurrection of other species names like Plumeria caracasana. And it really lays the foundation for continued phylogenetic work on Plumerias. Regarding prospects, I advocate a total evidence approach, especially if we're going to try and do some kind of taxonomic revision. We're definitely going to need to incorporate quantitative morphological measurements in our revisions, specifically dealing with reproductive traits. So we could carry out image analysis or the good old-fashioned ruler or caliper. And on top of that, more molecular data. So whole genome sequencing, with that becoming cheaper and cheaper to do, we should be able to finally get whole genome sequences of both chloroplast and nuclear DNA in there. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge my funding sources and also my PhD committee members, one of whom is in the back, and also other contributors to my research. Mahalo.